In Providence, I'm Elizabeth Harrison. The head of the FBI office in Boston made a stop in Rhode Island yesterday, but declined comment on the investigation into the Boston Marathon bombing and whether Catherine Russell of North Kingstown, the wife of one of the suspected bombers, has been cooperating. Richard DeLaurier attended a ceremony honoring state police who helped respond to the bombings. His visit came the same day that CNN and other news outlets began reporting a potential motive for the bombing. According to the Boston Globe, a note found in the boat where bombing suspect Jahar Tsarnaev was hiding suggests the bombing was payback for U.S. attacks against Muslims in Iraq and Afghanistan. Rhode Island's unemployment rate took a healthy drop in April, but as Rhode Island Public Radio's Flo Jonick reports, we're still a long way from restoring all the jobs lost in the recession.
Rhode Island's April unemployment rate was 8.8%. That's 0.3% lower than in March and the lowest rate in 4.5 years. Charles Fogarty, director of the State Department of Labor and Training, attributes the decline to increased consumer confidence.
Some of those businesses that were not able to hire in the past are now in a position to do that. So we've gone from not being able to hire to being cautiously optimistic and in a position to hire, and we want to see that continue down the road.
Fogarty says Rhode Island has regained 10,000 of the more than 39,000 jobs lost during the recession. The state's unemployment rate hung in the double digits for 3.5 years. Flo Jonick, Rhode Island Public Radio.
Seth Magaziner, the son of Clinton administration member Ira Magaziner, is considering a run for Rhode Island treasurer. Magaziner graduated from Brown in 2006 and now lives in Bristol. Rhode Island Public Radio has learned he's looking into the race for treasurer. And that race is heating up. Former state auditor Ernest Almonte has announced plans to run. And as Rhode Island Public Radio's political reporter Ian Donis reports, former treasurer Frank Caprio is also expected to run.
Almonte's decision to run for treasurer marks a switch since he announced plans last year to seek the governor's office in 2014. In a statement, Almonte doesn't explicitly explain his decision to change course, yet he says he's listened to input from Rhode Islanders and, quote, made a decision based on logic. Two Democrats, Treasurer Gina Raimondo and Providence Mayor Angel Taveras, are expected to compete in a high-profile primary for governor next year. Almonte says he would use his more than 3 decades of experience as a CPA to bolster the economy. His ideas include promoting financial education, overseeing a sound state investment strategy, and offering expert economic advice for cities and towns. Ian Donis, Rhode Island Public Radio.
And Providence is among the cities observing National Bike to Work Day today. Mayor Angel Taveras plans to bike to an event near City Hall. It's intended to show cycling as a healthy alternative to driving, according to Matt Moritz, president of the Rhode Island Biking Coalition.
You know, that is not necessarily the easiest decision to make to choose to ride your bike to work every day. And we also use it as an opportunity to encourage new people to take up commuting, and that it's not as hard as they might imagine, especially when you've got a whole bunch of people that are willing to help you out.
Mayor Angel Taveras will announce the dates and locations for a major biking event called the 2013 Providence Cyclovias. Bike Newport is also planning events today in Newport to mark National Bike to Work Day.
Thank you. We're joined as usual by Rhode Island Public Radio political analyst Scott McKay. Hello, Scott.
Good morning, Rhode Island.
And University of Rhode Island political science professor Maureen Moakley. Hello, Maureen.
Good morning, everyone.
We're pleased to welcome back as our special guest, physician, educator, and social activist Pablo Rodriguez. We should also note that he's a member of our board here at Rhode Island Public Radio. Thanks for joining us, Pablo.
Saludos, amigos.
Former state auditor Ernest Almonte has announced he's running as a Democrat for treasurer next year. This is a change since Almonte last year said he was going to run for governor. Almonte's announcement sets up a battle with former treasurer Frank Caprio, who hasn't yet said which party he'll affiliate himself with. Scott, why are we seeing so much early interest in the treasurer's office, and how would you point out the main differences between Caprio and Almonte?
Well, I think you're seeing the interest because these folks know they have to get out early, start raising money, build an organization. Now, Caprio's a pro. He's been there before, done this before, knows how to raise the money, has the base. Almonte is a little more of a neophyte when it comes to running for statewide office, but I think Almonte finally realized that the competition for governor is going to be very stiff, and it makes more sense for him if he wants to begin an electoral career, to do it with a down ballot race.
Maureen, we know Frank Capra has traditionally been a Democrat. Would you expect him to run as a Democrat, or do you think he'll be an independent or possibly even a Republican?
I can't say for sure. I mean, there's certain pros and cons about where he puts himself in terms of having a primary. He certainly has money. He certainly has name recognition. He can certainly talk about his experience if he wants to face a primary. But again, given the fact that there'll be other people running as independents, he might choose to go that way. We'll have to wait and see.
Pablo, what's your sense of the main differences between Capra and Almonte?
Well, I think it's clear. Capra has run the office before. He has a lot of knowledge about the office, and he needs to change his legacy. I mean, I don't think anyone wants to leave political life with the legacy of a shove it comment. So he has an opportunity to really, you know, show the electorate that he's not the person from the last election. So he has a lot to show. Almonte is, like I said, he's very knowledgeable about state government, but from there to become a governor is a very, very tough sell.
Governor Lincoln Chafee last week nominated former Senate President Joseph Montalbano as a Superior Court judge. As part of this move, the state Senate will have the chance to fill two vacant magistrate positions. Maureen, is this just Chafee's way of thanking the Senate for supporting same-sex marriage?
I think it probably has a lot to do with it. In terms of Joe Montalbano, I want to say that this is an example, in my opinion, of what I call enlightened patronage. That is that Joe Montalbano was very well respected within the Senate. He was very kind and inclusive to a lot of new members who now have some seniority there. And the other thing is, when the redistricting occurred the last time round, he gave up some of his North Providence safe seat so we could sustain a black seat in the Senate. Subsequently, he ran into some trouble with the Ethics Commission, which was more clerical than ethical, and it cost him to lose his seat. But people remember what he did, and so he's viewed very favorably within the institution.
How about that, Pablo? Is this enlightened patronage?
Listen, the process of electing judges in Rhode Island has to go through a process with a judicial nominating commission sending a number of names to the governor to choose. The governor has shown that he does not care about optics at all, that he does what he believes is in the best interest of the state. And in this case, Montalbano is a qualified person to become a judge. And at the same time, you know, we can have the debate about whether this was a payback for gay marriage. If it was, it still went through the proper process.
Scott, we know the selection of judges in Rhode Island has always been very politicized. Is this any different?
No, it's not. But here's the good news and the bad news. The good news is the way that Chafee did this politically was very smart, because he's elevated two magistrates, then giving the Senate the patronage to hire two more magistrates. Now, Montalbano is very well qualified. He's a smart guy, an Ivy League graduate, and all that. I have no problem there. However, to a lot of lawyers in the state, this sends a very bad message. The message is, why should I apply for a judgeship when it's wired for these insiders? Why should I go public, put my name out there, judicial nominating commission, show all my clients that I really want to be a judge, and then, you know, at the last minute, the governor just pulls out of his hat a couple of insiders, works it out with Teresa Pivoweed, and bang, that's who's now. In every state, at some level, a judge is a lawyer who knows a governor or a Senate president, or, you know, same as a federal judge is a lawyer who knows a senator. So it's almost like there's politics here in Rick's American Cafe, however, gambling rather, but however, it does send a message to the bar. I know a lot of lawyers are not happy about this.
Yeah, I agree with you, but I just wanted to say that it's a lot better than it used to be, and there still is this screening process. And as you pointed out correctly, that hardly in any of these cases there isn't some notion of connections, and that goes across states.
President Obama's having the worst week of his second term in office. He's under fire over Benghazi for how the IRS has targeted the Tea Party and the Justice Department's collection of Associated Press phone records. Pablo, how do you see the fallout and the impact on the president's second term?
Welcome to the next presidential election. This is a lot of politics. Benghazi was examined by an independent commission. Hillary Clinton has already accepted responsibility as Secretary of State. But yet, it's like we say in Puerto Rico, you know, when a tree falls, let's turn it into firewood. They're going to be talking about Benghazi until the next century, as long as Hillary Clinton is alive. The IRS controversy, the person in charge was a Republican appointee, a political appointee. The person that finally was fired was just a bureaucrat that has been there for 25 years and just became interim. So I think that the administration is responding to all this controversy, but in reality, this is all a lot of politics.
Scott, how has a guy who was such a great communicator in 2008 managed to frost both the left and the right?
Well, this is what happens in a second term. Let's be honest. These things crop up. I do wish the Department of Justice was a little tougher on the crooked bankers than on the Associated Press reporters. That would be a really nice thing to see. However, I saw people this week, including in the Journal and around the country on the talk blather cable networks, comparing this to Nixon. Now, wait a minute. This is absolutely ridiculous. There are no group of plumbers on the direction of top people in the White House running around breaking into Republican headquarters and getting into, like, Daniel Ellsberg's psychiatrist's office. That's a huge jump. That's really a ridiculous comparison.
Well, let's get Maureen in here. How serious are all these issues for the president and his efforts to implement his second-term agenda?
Well, certainly it slows him down. And, I mean, that's the real problem. I mean, he's looking at his legacy. He doesn't have that much time. He's a lame duck. My take on this is he's allowing that this is all political and exaggerated. He's responding appropriately to both the tax issue in terms of that kind of thing. My take is, in some curious way, there's really a long-term strategy as far as Benghazi is concerned. This is not going away. They're going to keep playing on it. And in that sense, these other issues kind of obscure that for the short term. In the short term, I don't think this is going to matter. But in the long term, when we get into electoral politics, Benghazi is going to continue to happen. It was a mishap. And the problem was the administration couldn't say it was a mishap because he had just done the first debate with Romney. It was election time. So there is something there in terms of some justified criticism, but it's very hard for the administration to backpedal. And this is going to be hung around his neck and Hillary Clinton's neck through the next election.
Quickly, because we're almost out of time, state revenue projections have come in $50 million below earlier estimates. That's in contrast to the upbeat tenor adopted by Governor Chafee on the economy. Scott, what does this show us?
Well, it shows us that we're still struggling with high unemployment. And, you know, when people are working, obviously, they pay more in taxes. I do think that a big thing that could help this state out would be the U.S. House, the Republicans in there, passing the Marketplace Fairness Act that would help every state by making sure that states are getting money and their tax rates are coming in for internet purchases, because it hurts small business right now in Rhode Island and across the country. This would help a lot and bring in some extra revenue.
We're out of time, so we have to leave it there. Thanks for joining us on Roundtable. Scott?
Great to be here.
Maureen?
Thank you.
And our special guest, Pablo Rodriguez.
Muchas gracias.
We're funded by you, our listeners, and by the Robertson Foundation, continuing the commitment of its founder, Stephen Hamblett, to honest government in Rhode Island through in-depth political coverage. And if you enjoy the conversation, please visit our On Politics blog at ripr.org.